So Sajid, do you want to update us on the status of the paper?
I think it's doing going fine. I just have to put some numbers and some modeling I have to do again. Modeling that won't take much time. 2-3 hours that will be done.
Which section are you referring to?
Modeling section, sir.
Mm-hmm. This section. This one, right? Section 4.
But where is the table?
This is the old one.
This is the latest version that I downloaded from. Or maybe because I already have that file. Let's show me the previous version.
Is this the new one?
This is
a new picture actually. I don't see it in this version. Why don't you go ahead and update us on?
Yeah, because there are some missing data I need to put it. For example, quadratic regression. Actually, when I do the quadratic regression, I did it for only OLTP and CPU benchmark. So memory and postmark, I didn't do it because it was showing large error. So I just discarded it at that time. So I have to just do that R.
Before you go into the details of the table, let's take a more high-level overview of the paper, right? So I think section, the abstract, introduction section, section 2, I think section 2 is the one that
Ming updated. Yeah. He wants us to change this picture a bit.
Right. I had some issues with section 2 when I read it last time, but I didn't do a revision, so maybe that's something I can do next.
Section 3, I think, will, no.
Section 3, I think, is okay, although it's a bit long, I agree. Section 3 is actual content, right, where we motivate the different parameters.
Yeah.
And for Zen, we provide specific parameters, mm-hmm. right, and we address all the dimensions, all the resources, mm-hmm. including network. So far we haven't said anything about
the model.
About the actual
model.
The models, we haven't had any discussion. So now in section 4,
first I describe about the details of the application itself, like how the application behaves, because the application behavior is very complex. So I motivate that in detail, and how the output characteristics changes with changes to the allocation parameters, mm-hmm. that I described first.
So here I see some things about training and so on.
Actually, when I say training, actually, I said that in modeling you need some kind of training or curve fitting data. So even in the beginning I use the term training.
Okay, so you start with the discussion on modeling, or you start with the discussion on the benchmarks?
I start with the discussion about the benchmark, but I also said that you need to do, because how we do the experiment.
Oh, how you do the experiment?
Yeah.
So how do you want to present this? Do you want to present first saying how we do the experiments and then say the benchmarks, or you first want to describe the workloads and their complexities and then show how we do the training and then finally evaluate the different modeling techniques?
Well, the thing is that the experimental setup is not complete here. That I put it for experiment section. here I only motivate that what kind of benchmarks I choose.
Mm-hmm.
I say that, okay, to encounter, we chose all possible types of benchmark.
Mm-hmm.
So that is motivated here.
Yeah, I think you don't want to state all possible types of benchmarks because that would be an overstatement, right? Because there's just so many different workloads in this world. It's just saying that we address four different types of benchmarks and just say what, in, you know, for what it's worth, without stating that we covered all possible benchmarks. So here you want to motivate the four different benchmarks, saying, okay, these benchmarks address different resource dimensions, without saying that we cover everything, right? And then you have some discussion about the training.
Yeah, no, about how I collect the whatever they say, like, okay, what I test or what type of data I collect. Those things are discussed here.
Now, do you need that information to go into the details of the benchmarks?
I think it's important. I mean, when I go into the modeling section, I have to say, okay, I use different levels of CAP, I use different levels of memory, I use different levels of IO, I use different levels of IONET. That needs to be talked to before. Otherwise, how can I talk about the modeling?
No, about the benchmarks, right?
No, that's not necessary for benchmarks.
So I'm just wondering, just if we rearrange the sequence of discussion, would it be more easy for a reader? Because if we move from, let's say, benchmark discussion to training discussion to back to benchmark discussion, would that be a bit confusing? Maybe we can co-locate the training with where we discuss the actual training.
Yeah, that can be done. I mean, just before the collecting or training start fitting.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that this can be done or not. I'm just wondering which is a better way to present the information, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can do whatever we want to, certainly. But is that good or no? I don't know because I haven't really read this section. I'm just glancing through it at this point. Okay, so first part you want to address the benchmarks, right?
Yes.
And the second part
is how I collect the card fitting or training data.
So this is collecting. So this is how you set up the experiments.
No. How I collect the training data? What is the procedure of training or modeling? Because some of the data is used for modeling, and the same data set is used for all kind of modeling. So first I talk about, okay, how I put aside the training versus the test data.
I see.
Because the same training data set will be used throughout all the modeling techniques.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is the procedure to collect data, the training data like you.
Yes.
Right, collecting the training data. Okay, so does that match with the discussion which we had here in the second paragraph of the section? I mean, does it make sense to move that here? No? In this part over here? I mean, something you might
or,
want to think
or
about.
We could move entirely to this section.
Yeah, that's what I asked. So does it make sense to move this over to the next section?
Yeah.
That's subsection.
Yeah.
We want to make sure that there are no dependencies for this part with this part, right? And if there are any, then maybe we cannot move everything out. Okay, so then you talk about the data collection procedure.
Mm-hmm.
So and you're describing as if so that anyone can do this, right?
Yeah.
And possibly, do you talk about automation of this data collection?
No, because I didn't do it in automatically.
That's fine, but can it be done automatically?
That's actually hard to say at this point. Later I found it is very hard to say if I can do it automatically. I mean, you can do it automatically, but I'm not sure if the accuracy will be the same.
Accuracy of what?
Accuracy of the ANN model.
If you can't do it automatically, then how will you defend that you can do it online?
The goal of this research is to give a tool to the system administrator and say, okay, here's how your application behaves. here are the knobs, go, and if you want a certain performance, our model is going to tell you what are the knobs to the set, and so on. So, in some sense, I think the training has to be argued as if it can be automated, if at all possible. So, what is the key roadblock to automation?
Key roadblock to automation is that things that you could automate in a certain way. For example, you know that CAP, okay, the database administrator will distribute the CAP between 5 to 40, let's say, for an application PM. And you raise partition it in, okay, 10, 5, 15, 25, 35, something like that. You could
right.
do that. I mean, that's how I discuss here. So, but the thing is that you don't know that if the application is dependent on CAP.
Yeah, but that's the whole point in creating a model, so we can find out if the application is dependent on CAP.
Yeah, but then there is no point taking more points in CAP. You could use, for example, if the application is more dependent on competing IO, it is more reasonable to take different ranges of IO.
Okay, so there is a... Okay, so here's the way I see it, right? The whole workflow is that you start by data collection, right? Then you do some sort of modeling. You do training, right? And from this training, do I have knowledge about what is the dependency of the application on various parameters?
Yeah.
Or do I know after data collection itself? Think about it from using it in an unknown application. How would you apply your research to an unknown application? That's the way you have to describe it, right? If it's a known application and you know that it's dependent on IO and so on, then it may be a wrong assumption. Who knows? Maybe it's not really, you think it's dependent on IO and it's not really dependent on IO. That's one. And second is that in all cases, you cannot know that information. And you want your research to be as general as possible, right, and as widely applicable. So you want to take the view that the application is an unknown application. Okay. In terms of how it uses resources, you may know it's a web server, but you don't really know exactly how resources are being consumed in the system. So you go ahead and do some data collection. And then you do some sort of training
in the model or crowd feeding.
Training the model with different, in this case, well, what we are proposing is that use ANN, right? So ANN, specific version, whatever, Elliot or something like that.
Yeah.
So use training with ANN Elliot.
Yeah.
And
then execute your model.
Then predict, right?
Predict.
Now, what you're saying is that if the prediction accuracy is less than some percent, let's say 80%, then I go back and collect more data. Is that what you're saying?
Or rearrange your data. That's not what I did.
Rearrange the data.
I collect, it could be collect more data points, or it could be rearrange the training data set.
Okay, so this is some sort of an iterative process that you went through?
Yeah, that I went through when I did the model.
Okay. So when you say rearrange, do you actually mean repartition the training and testing?
Exactly.
Is there a way to describe that repartitioning? I mean, this is going back to the discussion we had the other day, right? If we cannot describe our process, then it's not of much use to someone who is wanting to use our research. Is there a way that we can come up with this sort of a flowchart of the process?
What I did is that when I just find out that, okay, with fewer points, it's not, the accuracy is very low, so I took more points in between.
Mm-hmm.
Or in some cases, what I did is that sometimes what happens in an application training is that some of the data points are really very average, I mean, shows the output which is not expected at that point.
Not expected meaning the accuracy is very low?
Not kind of accurate, I'm talking about the application output itself. For example, you have a lot of application output in some specific range,
mm-hmm.
with some specific values of elevation.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the data points are not fitting into that range. So that could change the accuracy rather if you put those data points into the training set.
Okay, so you're saying there are some special cases of certain ranges of parameters that lead to output that changes the accuracy. Right. So, but there is a way to iterate through and...
Yeah, but there is a way to iterate, but I did it with manual observation.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, but I'm not sure if it can be done in an automated program.
No, but if there is a process for you to identify those points, right? I mean, when you see manually, you're coming up with a decision based on some pattern, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So are you looking at some pattern that you determine which? So are these points that you will discard from the training?
Yes. To improve my accuracy.
Okay. So how do you select these points to throw away?
So what happens is that, okay, you have 10 data points. In some, and those 10 data points actually confine your application to some specific output.
Mm-hmm.
And out of 10, you see that, okay, 8 data points are following the way, some way, following some pattern, the application output.
Some pattern.
Yeah, but 2 data points are completely showing, giving some kind of unexpected output.
Mm-hmm.
So I will just discard those 2 data points in that case.
Now, could we capture it by, So let me redraw this. I think it's very critical for us to explain the process of training, without which our contribution, you know, becomes not so good, right? So we start with data collection,
mm-hmm.
And then you partition the data into training.
But let's don't talk about the testing itself, because you could use the same data for testing. Let's talk about only training.
You use the same data for testing?
You could do that, because those are actually, in general, some data points.
Yeah, but that's not standard procedure when you evaluate models that you test with the same data that you train with.
So no, I didn't do it, but it could be that you could use the same data for testing.
The reason I wanted to put this step is because we might want to go back to this step to repartition the training, which is what you're really talking about. You're saying throw away some data from mm-hmm. my training set, which is basically, you know, creating a different model here.
Okay, yeah.
So that's the partitioning step,
mm-hmm.
right? So let me call it partition. So I could come back to this from some later point if needed. Okay, so I come up with the training and testing data, and the next thing is I train, do the training, right? Now, and then I use my prediction
for test data.
So in accuracy, acceptable, or whatever that. Greater than equal, whatever that you may choose. So if it is yes, what do you do?
If it's yes, I would just
done.
I mean, they use the same Darwin model.
Okay. So far it is all automatable.
Okay.
Yeah.
The way well, except that how you partition the training and testing data is not clear. That process needs to be described.
Okay, the partition.
And that's the part which is unclear.
Okay.
The data collection, is it automatable?
Yeah, that could be done automatically. That could be automated.
Okay. So training, can it be automated? Given training data and testing data, can I?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so that can be done automatically. Figuring out if the accuracy is acceptable can be automated,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So if the accuracy is not acceptable, do I do more data collection or do I train? Do I repartition?
It could be you do more data collection or it could be partitioning.
Now, how do you choose one or the other?
Okay, the thing is that for example, the application output is from, let's say, 10 to 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So you figure out that, okay, I took, because what I described here is that, okay, I partitioned the application output in some ranges
mm-hmm.
and to try to collect points that confine application output to those specific ranges. So if I figure out ranges are very big enough, so the application cannot capture the behavior within those ranges. So I collect more data points to create more ranges.
I see. Now, do you do that even if the accuracy is acceptable, that you fill the ranges?
No, then there's no need of that.
Okay.
Seems to be what you're doing is that you are trying to identify few ranges,
exactly.
And then you're selecting the training data out of that ranges.
Uh-huh.
If the training accuracy is good, then you're done. If the training accuracy is not good, then you redefine the ranges, make it shorter, redefine the ranges,
right.
And take more data within those ranges.
Uh-huh.
And in that way, you increase the number of data points. Within the ranges.
In that case, you create more data points.
To achieve the accuracy.
Yeah.
So, basically, when you say partition, it doesn't basically mean that, okay, it's a 50% partition, okay, you select the 50% data. When you mean by partition, that basically means that he's bringing more data into the, he has a set of data. He doesn't want to run another set of experiments, obviously. So he wants to pick up the data, some more data out of the existing data points, so that it can fill in the data points within the ranges.
But it would make sense not to collect more data than you absolutely need,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we want to do this in a staging environment, maybe
yeah.
have less time, or maybe
right.
do it in an online fashion.
I think what he's describing is very much automated, or very much possible to automate. What he's describing is like a to me, at least that's what I interpret it. Because the thing is saying that, okay, this is my skill. I initially take this level.
Exactly.
And
mm-hmm.
then
lower limit upper and
then take two data.
So this is the output range.
The
output metric.
No, input metric.
It's the input.
Output metric. This is output metric.
This is output. For example, you know that because I define how is the upper limit and how is the lower limit can be achieved for an application.
How do you do that?
Because you can put enough resources, for example, high memory value or high cap, low
okay.
computing IO,
okay.
lower
agreeable.
Okay. You put upper and lower is just completely reversible.
Okay.
So you take some ranges out of that.
Yeah.
And
then I found, okay, this is the U minus L is some application output, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, then I have to collect some points in between.
Mm-hmm.
In between those ranges. So
these are equally distributed.
These are equally distributed.
If he achieves accuracy, it's fine. If he doesn't achieve accuracy, then you can create more ranges.
Or the in inaccuracy.
Okay.
So in that case.
So when do you stop? So what do you do in that case?
You throw away some points.
Exactly.
Why?
Repartition.
How do you throw away?
See, you are going through some deterministic process, right? It might be that, okay, you go in a certain direction or you go in a certain direction based on some condition, but it's still deterministic. If it's a deterministic process, you should be able to explain it in some sort of a flow chart, and if you can make it into a flow chart, you can automate it.
That's
the way I see it. And in the end, they have to present and do the writing. In first of all, we have to convince ourselves that the whole thing is automatable, right? Otherwise, it will reflect in the paper. Our language and our sentiment will be interpreted in a way maybe that will reflect that, well, we don't believe this is automatable. Right? Some of the things we say in the paper will lead the reader to believe, well, this is seems random, right? So the key is that we shouldn't have any random element in the whole process. Where we don't know what to do next and we pick it, you know, arbitrarily, without any, you know, criteria of some sort. So far we have gotten, let's walk through this, maybe we can finish it up, but let's see, okay. So if you don't...
Okay, to answer Kaushik's question is that when I stop is that when I found that partitioning or putting more data doesn't help the accuracy. In that case, I use the repartitioning.
Okay.
Or try to align the ranges.
Repartitioning, you throw away some data?
Throw away some data and putting... So when the putting more data points doesn't help, what I do is just putting less points on the train.
Hmm. Okay. It itself is becoming a kind of complex algorithm.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the key parts of the paper, and that would be one question that the reviewer might ask. Okay, I have the parameters, I have the data, well, what do I do next? How do I train my horse? And it's not, I mean, as you're describing it, it's not trivial.
Maybe that's the case, actually. Maybe that just collecting the data and just applying the neural network will not work.
No, it doesn't work.
So, yeah, that's fine. That way, actually, that's the value addition.
Yeah, so that could be one of the contributions that, okay, we present a training procedure for the neural network that is shown to be robust across a variety of different applications.
If you can write that in the algorithmic format. But to do that, you have to write that in algorithmic format.
Or you make some sort of flowchart like this. So let's walk through this. Maybe it will help you write your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So if the accuracy is not acceptable, and this is just the first round so far. So we started with some partitioning. We didn't capture yet that initial step, which is find the extremes and then subdivide. Right? We didn't capture that. Find the extremes of the output metric range, and then subdivide and check if you have points in each range. So here. Point in each output range. That's what you check.
Mm-hmm.
I have one point in each of those. And this I do only if my accuracy is not acceptable. Correct. And if I don't have at least one point in each range, then what do? Then I do more data collection.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a specific way to, now which data do you collect? What are the input parameters you now?
Okay, this is very simple because, for example, you collected cap values, let's say 5 and only 20.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say I am varying cap from 5 to 40.
Mm-hmm.
And you could try, you took only 5, 20, 40.
Mm-hmm.
Then you found, okay, my accuracy is not good, then try to collect at 10 and at 30.
I see. So,
but you just said in the way, you said you're dividing the range and the output, this is input.
Doing this will actually automatically divide the output range.
Okay.
So we'll create more points.
We'll create more points and it automatically divide the output into more ranges.
But that is something you have to specify in this. How do you divide the output range, right? In this,
for example, this. I mean, let's say that this is the output range.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, I'm creating some small ranges in this output, right? Now, how do you achieve this small range? That's your question, right?
What are these sub-ranges here? I initially thought that we're dividing the output range into equal parts.
Well, for example, but thing is that doing divisions in the allocation itself, you create output range. Otherwise, how can we know the output? How can you create the output range?
Right. So first, you allocate very low amount of resources, so you know the lower bound. And then you allocate very high amount of resources, you know, the upper bound, right? And then you divide it into certain equal number of parts.
The allocations itself, to equal
number. Not the allocations, it's the output range. So the output range you divide into equal number of parts, you do the training and so on, you find the accuracy is not good enough, and at that point you examine, do I have points in each of the output ranges? If I do, then maybe I need more output ranges. So I subdivide the output ranges further and check again, do I have points in each output range? If not, then I go back to data collection.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the way I thought this was going to work, is that you do it based on the repartitioning of the output range.
Yeah, but thing is that an administrator doesn't, I mean, how do you know that which allocation will ensure that, okay, this is the all the, I mean,
yeah.
How you achieve this point, for example? Which allocation will achieve this point? How can
you're not achieving specifically this point. You're achieving any point in this range, any point in this range, any point in this range, and any point in this range. As long as you have one point here, one point here, one point here, one point here, you cover all the ranges. You don't have to pick exactly that one. Right? The idea is just to have output values that are spread across the entire range.
Exactly.
So, okay, am I spread across the entire range? That question will be answered. Do I have points in each output range? Okay, now, that will tell me that I'm spread across the entire range uniformly, but it doesn't tell me, oh, do I have enough points or not? Because I'm spread across the entire range, but I don't have sufficient points to train my model. In that case, I will have to repartition the output range. Do I now have points in each range or no? And at some point of subdivision, you no longer the answer will be yes, and then you go back and collect more data to fill those missing ranges of output.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're doing?
Okay, so
now you have points.
So this is all you're talking about, that if the accuracy is not correct, you're going to more data collection.
Yeah,
more
exactly. Or
less. More or less.
Exactly.
Yes.
So now what I'll do is here, subdivide output range further. So this is the DS. Then I go back and check. Do I have points in each output range now? At some point it has to be no. Correct? And at that point I will say, well, I need to do add more data so that I can fill those output ranges.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now the question is, what do I do at this point when I see that, well, some output ranges are missing data.
Some output ranges are missing data.
Mm-hmm.
Then you collect, actually.
You do more data collection.
Mm-hmm.
But the first thing is that you need a process to describe the input parameters you do for the first data collection, and then each time you do a data collection, you have to specify another process to pick the input parameters.
Exactly.
Okay. So how do I pick input parameters for the new round of data collection?
It's like same way you have four rounds like cap, memory, ionize, IO. Right? You collected, because you know that you collected the data, the outputs, for only 5, 20 and 40. Now you for and memory for let's say 100, 200 and 500. And for same IO system. Now you know that you have to create more data points. So what you'll do is that collect a cap between 5 and 20, collect a cap between 20 and 40, between 100, 200, 200, 500, then same strategy for ionize and IO. And still, with all this combination, create the data points.
So,
because that will ensure your more data points in all the output ranges.
So with this, it seems like you're just picking here based on some uniform distribution without any intelligent mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
So the good thing is that it's probably automatable, and it seems like it's automatable. But maybe there are some ranges that you really don't care about anymore. So for instance, if my output range, the second half of my output range has lots of points. The first half has very few points. You really care about only this one. And some of those choices may create points in this range, which are not really useful. Do you do something along that direction, or something intelligent than just choosing all the missing ones?
Yeah, but that choice is actually dependent on your observation.
So basically, you take the output and then you decide which one to throw and which one to use.
Yeah.
So can you describe that?
It's very hard because, for example, I can tell you how I collect it, but because from an automation perspective, I'm not sure if it can be done.
Go ahead and describe
yourself. For example, just as you say that maybe it's not necessary to have more caps.
We don't know that. You don't know. Yeah, it may be that the cap doesn't help at all, but we have to know that cap doesn't help.
So
somehow, what is the process to find out that cap doesn't
actually help? Well, you know that what will happen is that even if you just repartition all of those and create more data points, that will automatically guarantee to cover some ranges.
That is true. But this is a brute force method. That when you add more points, you'll get more points. But what this requires is time. As you need more training, you need to spend more time doing data collection. In a scenario where you don't have much time, this brute force technique may not be the most appropriate.
Yeah, that's exactly in that case what I applied is that what I noticed that okay, the cap and ionize doesn't have any impact at all.
So although you change the cap and ionize, the
output doesn't change it much. So I figured, okay, the memory is actually most important parameter.
So is there a way to derive that based on my dependency? I mean, there is some analysis that you're doing here.
That I do based on the application, nature of the application. For example,
it's not nature of the application at all. It's the set of data that you collect. Here are your input parameters, here are your output parameters, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you just look at these numbers and you can find out.
Yeah, that
you're getting the nature of how do you get the nature of parameters.
No, for example, for memory benchmark cap benchmark, I observed that, okay, this memory is the most important factor.
You're getting the nature of the application by looking at the data.
That's true. Yeah.
So you can derive that nature by looking at the data.
Yeah, but if it's automatable, that's
can we, so for instance, can we find a correlation between the input and output parameters? That might be one simple thing. Okay, if I see that as I change cap, the output is not changing at all, then there's no point training with more cap.
You can do correlation, you can do sensitivity analysis.
Just fixing the other parameters only changing cap itself.
You want to know which parameter is driving the changing the output more.
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
So you can become cautious and have to send it to the analysis. And then end up.
So one thing which you can state here, I mean, you don't have to have all the details here. You can have a high-level statement in or high-level step in this box, which you can explain in the text. The repartition correlated input parameters. Right? And then you go back to collect additional data. And then you do a partitioning again to training and testing.
Mm-hmm.
So this seems like something that captures one specific flow of thinking that you've described. The other flow is where I threw out some of the points from my training set. When does that happen in this whole process?
It happens is when, for example, is that when you are looking at the observation or input versus
accuracy?
Output. No, the input versus output characteristics.
Okay.
How the input changes, how the output changes with the changes.
You can do that at any point after this test, right? After you have the
testing and data collection.
Yeah. So in this flow, at which point are you going to do it?
When I see that putting more data into this is not helping, the accuracy.
Okay. Oh, so you need to have a mechanism where you examine the current accuracy with the previous accuracy. Okay, I see.
Or it could be the there is a known term called overfitting.
Mm-hmm.
So in some case I found that if the accuracy is actually decreasing. So in that case I have to throw data.
Right, so you have to have a way of examining the current accuracy with the previous accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the basic idea. Okay. So I go back into data collection and this is something we have to expand on further. Let me do something here. So initialize accuracy is 0. So its accuracy is greater than the previous accuracy. This is what you do. After you finish your training, you find out if current accuracy is greater than previous accuracy. The first time it will work because accuracy is 0. And you go down. If accuracy is greater, then you go down this way and you do this. If not, you go this alternate route,
mm-hmm.
which is
repartition.
Repartition training and testing.
Yes. Just partition is enough.
You go back and partition again.
Mm-hmm.
So what if you're stuck in this all the time? Is that possible?
No. If you observe that your accuracy is not improving, then you could stop. Or if staying at the same point, you could stop. Because it is not guaranteed that you would achieve the your accuracy metric while for any application.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it may happen, you specify, okay, I want to obtain accuracy of 5%, 95%.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it happens for a specific application, it's not achievable.
Mm-hmm.
you achieve accuracy of say 90%, then you have to stop at some point. If none of these helps, then you have to stop.
Okay. Okay. So I think that there are some things which we have to explain further to.
Now the question is that how do you repartition the data?
Yeah. How do you repartition the data?
It's the same way. It's that, okay, sometimes I found that, okay, that ionize doesn't have any impact on an application. But what it's doing is that doesn't have any specific trend, but sometimes it's actually giving a wrong impression. Because it's not following any specific trend, and what I'm saying is that INS doesn't have any impact. Is that it doesn't change the output that much. For example, not more than 5%. The change of INS. But what it's doing is that it's throwing random numbers in this 5% rate without following any trend. So in that case, what I did is that I throw away some combinations of points, throw away some points with ionize.
Now when you say some, is there a specific set of, or do you have a process to throw away certain points?
Yeah, for example, first you do the collection of all possible combinations, so 503, 500, 0, 507. But later we found out that ionize doesn't have any impact, it's actually giving a wrong impression on the application output.
Now, when you say wrong, this is the part that I don't get. What do you mean by? So I understand that ionize does not have any effect, but if it doesn't have any effect, and or it changes the output by a very small amount, what is the problem in leaving it there? Why do you have?
Well, for example, what I'm saying, it doesn't really, but it has some impact. For example, it changes the accuracy from. Some output from 25 to 30, for example, if you keep all of the constants. It's only changing the application output from 25 to 30. But sometimes it's picking 30, sometimes it's picking 25, sometimes it's picking 27, without following any trend.
So it seems like you are, now ionize is an uncorrelated parameter here.
Exactly.
So what you're saying is, I identify the uncorrelated parameter.
You're reducing the number of values for the uncorrelated parameter.
Mm-hmm.
So if there are values from 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe he becomes 0, 3, and 5. Because it's uncorrelated, so it doesn't give
you the thing is that if both of these guys require us to determine the correlation.
Yeah, and he's driving the correlation on his own. But that can work quite well.
Yeah, the question is how can we automate that? Because we could use linear regression, for instance, but we show that linear regression does not capture the behavior of the application. With ANN, can you get correlation coefficients also?
No. The only way you can get the correlation coefficient is if you just keep all the values constant and try to compute the correlation coefficient of these things.
That's a lot of.
Or you can say that, okay, my application knowledge will tell me that I can specify, system administrator can specify on which parameter what are the most dependent parameter of the application.
Yeah, then it is not completely automated.
Then it's not completely automated.
So now, can we use linear regression to get the correlation coefficient? Does that work?
You can, but the linear regression will work only when if you have 5 parameters and if the three parameters are constant, then only the linear regression will work.
Mm.
If the three parameters are not constant, then if all the parameters are changing, then linear regression will not give you anything.
Couldn't linear regression give me some correlation between the input parameters and the output parameters? Some correlation coefficient? The only thing is whether those correlation, can we believe those correlation coefficients or not? Right? And the confidence on those coefficients might be low.
My sense that it's probably too complicated to explain in this paper in terms of the space. So probably far by now.
But I think we have to be more and more precise in our description of the procedure.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, some reviewer might say, "Well, I don't understand what you're really doing here. You know, I understand what the parameters are, but." I understand
ANN
works, but I don't, you know, what, how do I use your research? How do I, I think having this level of detail will help. Even if there are some parts which are not fully automated. We can say that the correlation coefficients or correlations are
yeah.
derived by some other mechanism which we don't know how to automate. At this point we are doing it manually. But maybe we can be automated using this specific tool.
You can handle the product.
But in general I think that we have to really think about the process and be more precise when we describe the process in section 4.
Okay, so what you could do is maybe either have an algorithm of some sort that captures this diagram.
Mm-hmm. I would say better to draw the flow chart.
Yeah, so if you want to draw the flow chart, go ahead and draw the flow chart. What do you use to draw the flow chart?
Not sure.
What do you mean?
In what tool can we use to draw the flowchart? And I know there are some flowchart building tools, but I've never used one in any picture.
Visio is there.
Mm.
Or you can
but I can do it in PowerPoint, right?
You can do it in PowerPoint also.
Okay. Okay, so go ahead and I think add that, and then you can also tune your discussion of the procedure and explain the flowchart.
Okay.
There are some initial steps which are missed here. So you might have to expand the flowchart a little bit.
Okay.
To say, okay, how do I do the initial
data collection?
The initial data collection by choosing the end. How do I set up the endpoints and so on? Because I think there is some input requested from the system administrator to say, okay, what are the range of resource values do you plan to allocate for this virtual machine in the best case and the worst case. And I think that's a perfectly reasonable
assumption
that you can ask this of the system administrator, because you cannot assume any details of the underlying hardware platform, right, or the plans for deployment alongside other virtual machines, which might affect allocations for this virtual machine. Okay, now there is another part where you talk about the how you generate the I/O competing I/O.
No, that I moved for different.
You moved for a later one. Okay. All right. So I think that having that process will strengthen this section where you describe the procedure.
I'm going to change in 4.2.
Yeah, and then the next one is. Where you evaluate the alternative regression?
Yeah, three different types of regression.
one thing which you should certainly do is to use symbols for each of your input parameters. And
Okay.
So that you don't have to use these long names, right?
Okay.
And that's easy. So here you're describing, and do you have these organized as subsections for each model? Subsections or something like that?
No, I have to put it together. So, but I could do it in paragraph way.
So you can do subsections. That works with this paper.
Okay.
Except that you don't get a number, you get the bold font header for each paragraph, for the paragraph.
Okay.
So the goal of this subsection... Hi, Neda. Yeah, I think we are running late. About... are you going to be in the lab?
I'll be in from
6:45. Okay, yeah, I think we should be done in about 10-15 minutes.
Okay.
Something like this one. The subsection.
Okay.
Yeah. And so the goal of this section is to present available alternatives for modeling and to discuss why they are not adequate.
Yeah.
You discuss why they are not adequate?
In linear equation I did, but in quadratic and interactive terms,
mm-hmm.
something linear with interactive, I didn't have a specific reason.
Mm-hmm.
Just they say that, okay, we found out that trying those alternatives doesn't help based on our observation in the accuracy level.
Mm-hmm.
Because in complete linear equation, I could say easily because I could point to the complex nature of each application and say that, okay, it's not working. Only in postmark it's working because the postmark applications are is very much linear in terms of with instance to its input parameters.
Mm.
That I described.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure how I could do it for the quadratic or interactive terms.
Now, one thing which we observed was that for especially the I/O terms, or even memory, right? So when the amount of memory allocation is larger than the working set size, then there is no impact of the allocation of memory because you have more memory than you need. It doesn't matter whether you have 10 times more or twice as much than you need.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, so there is this sort of step function. I think the point that you can use is that each of these guys is a smooth curve. Right?
Okay.
Whereas with, for instance, with memory resource, this, and maybe this will be true for I/O as well, that as long as you have sufficient memory, you don't have any impact of the memory resource, but if it starts going below the amount that you need, then there is substantial penalty or the performance degradation, which cannot be captured by a smooth function like a linear or a linear with quadratic with linear terms.
Yeah. One terminology is the quadratically increasing function. So these are not quadratically increasing. Even if we increase,
well, it might be monotonically increasing.
If you increase the memory, at some point the performance will not increase.
Yeah, but it's still monotonic as long as it doesn't go down. So if it remains stable, it's still monotonic.
Okay.
So I think it just smooths.
Capped at some point.
Yeah, it's not as... I don't know what the technical term for that is, but that's the behavior that these functions cannot capture.
Okay, let's talk about another point.
And I think we probably need to compare against the stepwise linear because even the middleware 2008 paper, they actually use the stepwise linear function, stepwise linear regression. And I remember that you tried that as well.
No.
No?
Stepwise linear is the neural network, right?
No, there is no stepwise linear in neural.
I thought you saw it on the list of...
No, there's not.
There was?
No. I checked it.
But you brought a printout where it was printed that you had stepwise linear.
Where it was printed stepwise linear. It was called piecewise linear.
Piecewise linear. Yeah.
In the same page where you had the Elliott function.
Piecewise linear, that's the right.
Not to see that. But I remember it did, even I tried all the functions, so it didn't work. So just I have to prove the numbers.
But is there a different piecewise linear regression apart from the ANM implementation?
There's completely different. Then you have to segment that.
So is there can we use a tool to do that automatically?
No, it's not. You have to manually do it.
You might want to look at the Middleware 2008 paper,
R may do that, but not Excel doesn't do that.
Stepwise linear regression. We employ iteratively reweighted least squares from the robust regression family. The robust regression technique uses a bi-square weighting function which lessens the weight and the impact of data points with high error. So it seems like they're using some more advanced linear regression here. They don't talk about what sort of regression tool that they are using. Complete description of the stepwise and robust regression techniques we use is deferred to a technical report. We have a technical report that would probably have that information. If that is an easy tool for us to show, then maybe we should, because a similar approach has been proposed in a recent paper. But it's perhaps not that critical. It's maybe not that critical, and given the short time, maybe we might not be able to do that. Okay, so let's keep this in mind, and if we have time remaining, then maybe we could address this also. Okay, so in this you have linear regression, quadratic, and quadratic with linear terms.
Mm-hmm. Associative. No, linear, quadratic with linear, and linear with interactive term.
Mm-hmm. And then, so you show that the accuracy of these guys are not good enough.
Good enough. Exactly.
And here you have average, median, and 90th percentile.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying, because this is taking too much space. Okay, could we just put a single figure with median error only? For just comparison, I mean, I would say I will show detailed error only for our chosen pan Elliott function. But for others, I could just combine this.
Well, you could make a single table out of all of this.
Yeah, that will be big, really big table.
No, you can make it footnote size and compress everything into one table, because it's not too much of a difference. So for instance, you could have, once you fill in all the numbers, I'll make that table for you.
It's interesting because you can make this on average and error goes and can go into the next line.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it in double column.
Oh, okay.
So
it's not hard. So I can do it during my revision, but I would need all the numbers.
Immediately what I will do is I will do the look into put the figure into
mm-hmm.
into the card fitting
and integrate the description in this. I have
all this in a single table. This one, this three, and
the fourth guy.
And these two.
Yeah. So that we can have a comparison.
Everything in
across all the methods.
Everything in a single table, single large table, so that you can look at the table and that will give you everything.
Exactly. That's a good idea. Well, once you populate all, forget about the table for the time being. I mean, once you have all the numbers, I think one of us can do the table. It's very easy. But what is more important and time-consuming perhaps is that figure and the corresponding description needs to integrate it with the current description. Right. And then you have a separate subsection for ANN model.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And there you explore the different ANN modeling techniques.
ANN activation functions.
Activation functions.
How many of them?
I have three. I will put one more. Right now I have three, fan linear and fan Elliott.
Okay.
Because there are a bunch of functions.
You need to give the function because I searched that these functions are not standard.
Hmm.
So you need to put the actual function that is there in the document.
Okay. Can I use that same notation and same thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You have to refer it.
We have to make a reference, exactly.
Okay, yes, I have a different way of describing it.
So here, do you have this, you know, an insight for why these other guys don't do well and why ANN does well?
It's probably the choice of function.
Yeah, but why does a certain function do better than other function? Is there intuition behind that?
That I couldn't find out because, for example, fan linear can be easily discarded because it's a linear activation function.
Mm-hmm. But do you describe why we can discard it? I mean, why the accuracy is not good in the text?
Yeah.
Okay, so you have some insight into why fan linear doesn't work.
Doesn't work. But my question actually, I put it in my email also because why fan linear Elliott works? That I don't have insight right now.
Mm-hmm.
I searched on the SMD delivery and IT delivery. The only thing I found is the Elliott function is used very much in modeling hardware.
Really?
I found a line like that in one of the hardware paper in IT.
I mean, it might be I think it is important for us to give some intuition why Elliott is able to capture this behavior, because it actually does a good job, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's our, you know, a key contribution, that we identify a certain family of ANN that actually is able to capture performance of application in virtualized environments. Anyway, so for the things that you are not able to address, please put in reminders.
Okay,
otherwise it will get missed out and then we'll get a comment back up in the reviews that said, why didn't we think about that and pay more attention to it. Just put a reminder so that when someone else is doing a revision, if they have a way to describe it or explain it, they can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And similarly, if you lack insight or explanation into any of the results, please put a reminder there.
Okay.
So someone else can, you know, fill in the gaps if it were possible. Okay, so experiments?
Experiments is I have all the graphs I will put.
Okay.
I didn't put in words yet.
Okay. I think we have to...
Only one graph I have to do is I have the influence of training lane only for OLTP benchmark. So I have to probably do it for other benchmarks.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that one reviewer asked it.
Yeah, that is important. Now, let's go again sequentially. Work on finishing up all the to-dos in the section 4 so that you can pass it on to me and Kaushik and so on, so we can help you finalize that and then you can move on to section 5.
Okay.
Yeah? So what is the timetable, the revised timetable, because we didn't make our original planned deadline. When do you want to finish up section 4?
Friday.
Then you have to complete by tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. It's due on Friday?
Yeah. 31.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I think we should try and wrap up the paper completely and address everything by Wednesday. So we have at least a couple of days to read it with a clear mind and find out and address some of the missing points. So why don't you do the following? If you can, you know, let's say address the comments in section 4 immediately, do that. So tomorrow, let's say tomorrow, we, you know, the three of us, we manage to revise section four.
Then I will do the section 5.
And tomorrow you can work on section 5, and then on Wednesday we can go ahead and revise section 5.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else missing?
I think related work was pretty robust at the time we sent it to the. Only this paper is missing. Middle of paper.
Now, given the new, the contributions of the previous paper were not really well recognized. So our related work may reflect that previous understanding of our contribution, right? So that is something we might have to revisit. It is probably robust in terms of, identifying all the related pieces of work, but that's not the related work, right? The actual distinction of our contributions with those may have to be revisited. So that would take time as well. And I think that maybe we could do that on Wednesday as well.
Okay.
Yeah? Excuse me. Hello? Yeah, I'm still not done with my meetings, but I think I should be done by 6:45. I'll call you. Bye. Yeah, so I think that's it. Well, it's time to get going on this. So Kaushik, how are you placed on time, and how do you want to sort of channel efforts between the
The only problem I'm hoping that I'll get back my laptop by tomorrow.
Oh,
my laptop died, so I.